All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group Studio in Apple Town, USA, it's Necro Nalapod with your host, Mark Spuffalo, Mike Moncada, episode 94, Peter Klein's 14. The story, the cautionary story of the high cost of low rent and the monsters who lovecraft them. And now, Necro Nalapod.
Specific military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
All right.
Hey. Well,
here we are.
Our special breakfast edition.
I know. I love cocktails in the morning.
I know.
Before noon. You think we're so decadent.
You think we're joking, but we're actually drinking cocktails here before noon. Shame on us.
We have to.
We have to. This is what we do. Yeah. So, how are things?
Good.
Lovely summer, isn't it?
So far.
Yeah, it's pretty good. How did you enjoy this book?
I mixed on this book.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's things I enjoyed it and then I didn't.
There are
I did it, and then I did again.
I am mixed on this book too. I think it's
good.
I think it's
that'll make for an interesting podcast.
Exactly. I think it's very very light and fluffy, but I really enjoyed reading it. I was thoroughly entertained all the way through.
Oh, interesting.
And I think part of that is because you read it and I listened to it, right?
Right.
We have to do like a podcast someday on the power of a good reader, because this guy really performed the hell out of it.
Lots of
different voices, lots of different characters in this book.
There's a lot. This is a character laden.
Yeah, what's the whole?
This was like Gilligan and all the rest. Is what this was.
It's like all of It's all of the characters on Gilligan's Island and all the characters on the Lost Island.
And you had to pretty much. Because there had to be people to kill off.
Yeah. But he kept them straight. He did the voices and kept them all straight in my head. And there are slow parts, I admit. There are some slow parts. It's a slow build.
Oh, Lord. I mean, is this going anywhere, people? That's what I kept saying.
I know. What?
And then it just turned.
It turns a couple of times.
So let's start. I'm going to start off and say this.
All right.
I did not think of this as a horror novel. I thought of this more as a kind of a mystery.
Yep.
And maybe more sci-fi.
Yeah. I think it was a little of all of those things.
But it was mostly a mystery. Because not much happens that is terrifying.
No.
And even, you know, even when you get to the part where things just go wacko.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, but everything up to that point is mostly clues.
Yes.
And that goes on for a long time.
Yeah.
And the book, what this book kind of reminded me of was just that trope in horror movies where the cat jumps out and you scream, and oh, it's just a cat.
Jump scares.
That feels like there was a lot of that. There's the old... there's the super. He's just mad because you tore up the walls.
Yeah.
He doesn't really kill you or anything. Or, oh, there's the super again, you know? Or,
what are you meddling kids doing?
That's mostly what that. And that goes on a long time.
There's definitely an element of that in this book. One of the things that had me worried and then made me, I was very glad about was that
you giddy?
I was worried that this book was going to adhere too closely to the Scooby-Doo plot. And then I was glad that it actually kind of did and pulled it off. I was entirely charmed by the Scooby-Doo-ness of this story.
What's the Scooby-Doo-ness of it?
It's just this clutch of people who are trying to solve a mystery. And they find a bunch of clues, and then they meet and they talk, and then they split up again, and they find a bunch more clues, and then they meet and they talk, and they split up again. And the scary caretaker pops in once in a while to make sure that the meddling kids aren't getting in his way. And then there's this big reveal. Inevitably in Scooby-Doo, it was never supernatural. Here it's sort of supernatural.
It's just supernatural.
And they're very explicit. I mean, some of the characters...
It's super duper natural.
Some of the characters actually like assign themselves the roles. So our main character, Nate, is kind of the Shaggy guy. And there's Veek, mm-hmm. The computer wizard.
She's Daphne.
She's definitely...
No, she's Vera.
She's Velma. Velma, who was always the hottest one. And
clearly the guy, the blonde guy with the scarf, was the hottest one.
Clearly. But in this book, it's probably Richard who hooks up with the blue-haired artist. Forget her name. Damn it, I just finished this book.
I like to call her Tits.
The topless sunbather. She's Daphne. That's Daphne and Fred. And there's a lot of other characters. Another storyline that is very consciously in the background here, besides Scooby-Doo, is Lost.
Well, and also we have, I really think it's also House of Leaves.
Yes.
House of Leaves Light.
It's House of Leaves Light.
Yeah. It really felt like House of Leaves.
Mm-hmm. Without taking itself quite that seriously.
Right. That's really all I could think of was when they were going down and down and down and down into the earth. Is that reminded me of House of Leaves?
Yeah, it's funny though. I mean, there was these tropes in horror novels that just like make my mind expand, and like
in a good way.
Like I get really interested. I'm like, oh my god, I've got to find out what is behind that door. But when they do that little camera trick to get just to see what's behind that locked door,
uh-huh.
and they realize it's a stairway banister and steps leading down below where the basement should end.
Right.
I just thought, oh my god, I can't wait till they go down there, and I was hooked. I was completely hooked, and that's pretty early on in the book.
Yeah.
So that's. I mean.
I think I mostly got hooked when they started peeling the paint off the walls.
Yes, that was another great bit. That was a great little bit. And they discover all this mysterious writing, which
still doesn't make sense.
Doesn't totally make sense. That's the other thing that's very Lost like about it is that this book makes gestures towards explaining things, and things get explained. There are passages that are explain-y, kind of like truthy. They're explain-y, but they don't really solve anything. They just fill places where an explanation would go. There was a number of moments like that in this book for me that were just like candy for my imagination, and I was so entertained when the author set them up in front of me, and then would explore them. That whole trip down into the underground, and that wasn't even essential.
Nothing happened.
Yeah.
Except it got hot.
Yeah, it got hot.
And you're like waiting for the cat to jump out.
In another book, that would be like the big finish.
Yeah.
And this is just a little bit in the middle. They're just finding out more about the apartment building. It's really interesting. And there's more scenes like that in different ways. When they actually do finally get behind the door of number 14. By the way, you know, we say right in our podcast that this is a spoiler. Everything we talk about here is spoilerful. This book, your enjoyment of the book will be greatly diminished if you don't want to know this kind of stuff. So if you want to read the book.
This is a book group, so you've already read the book.
You have already read the book.
Or you read the Wikipedia.
So you should stop listening and go read the book before we give away every single delicious thing about this book. So there, fair warning.
You said delicious.
It's tasty. Anyway.
I'm so embarrassed.
I'm not. I'm drinking in the morning.
I mean, there were some. I just crapped my pants.
Oh,
nothing to be embarrassed about. Yeah, and there is a lot of scenes where they're sitting around talking about.
Yeah.
About what they're discovering and.
I know.
But they're not discovering, and who divvying up the work, and it felt like a board meeting. Actually,
it's funny that scenes they keep coming back to those scenes where they're up on the roof, or they're in the lounge, and they all meet together and they discuss what they found. And those roof scenes, at first I thought, oh, this is getting kind of repetitive, but I actually sort of got this Cheers like feeling of like, oh yeah, everybody's back together again and they're having a beer and they're looking at the sunset, and it was kind of nice.
I have to say.
And when it stopped, I was sad.
It was sad. It was sad when it stopped.
Yeah.
It reminded me of my condo building when all my neighbors moved out, because we used to sit on the porch and drink. And
yeah, they all moved out.
They all moved out.
And rented to assholes.
I have to say that I kind of figured it out pretty early on that Andrew, I think it is.
Yeah.
right away, it's like, oh, he's was a member of the family.
Was it the big red herring on his shirt? There's right. No red herring, but yeah.
He brought red herring to the party with celery sticks and Ritz crackers. You knew right away. It's like, yeah. You should come to our church.
Yeah.
You'd be very welcome. It's like, oh, he's got to be part of the cult or whatever it was.
I didn't know what specific his, he was super suspicious. I didn't know exactly how until we find out about the existence of this, the Red Hand cult or whatever they were called.
Right.
They're red something. We'll just call them the Red Herring cult.
Red Herring.
The cult of the Red Herring.
The family.
The family. The family. Yeah, the family. But there's a name like the Red something.
Yeah.
But once they was like, oh yeah, they're still around. He's one of them. Boom. And sure enough, there he is.
There he is.
But the there's a couple like really good like cliffhanger. If this was a TV series, and it could be, cliffhangery finishes like when the family, the other members of the family come up to the house, to the apartment building, and the old grandmother comes up to the guy who's surveilling Tim, the retiree.
Yeah.
And asks him.
He dies.
And she just grabs him by the back of his neck and slams his head into his own steering wheel enough times to cave in his skull. She's like, ooh, she's strong. Oh, yeah. Okay, well. And that if there was a TV series, that would be the end of that episode. You have to wait till next week.
Right.
What sort of shit is hitting the fan?
I have to say that the okay, so you get this build up. You find out that the whole apartment building is this machine.
Yes.
That's keeping the world from hitting midnight for doomsday. Basically,
yeah.
It's holding it back.
Yes.
And you get. See, here's the problem with some of these things is you get to the next, all right, what's the horror of it?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it's like, it's kind of ridiculous in a way.
It's squails.
Yeah. It kind of was like, it's almost like better to not know what was on the other side of the veil.
I know.
Because you get to the other side of the veil, that other side of the veil, because the whole, the whole apartment building gets transported into this other dimension, right? Yeah. And that stuff pans out so quickly and they're riding bikes to the big temple and nobody's noticing really until they get there. There's these giant like cow whale things.
Squales.
And it all just like, it happens too fast and easy. And then you're back in the house, you're back in the apartment building. There's some ruckus, but a couple people die, but it really takes place fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And then, the sort of the tension is getting all the dials on the machine
reset
correctly, right? What is the dust and the thing and up and the bed? Oh, yeah, turn it to the left. Ah!
Yeah. Wait, there's the one that you turned last week.
Right.
Yeah.
That, I don't know. The payoff was not great. I gotta say, it wasn't great, and it was.
I do have to. Yeah, I will agree with you. I would say that the
it was goofy.
The climax was goofy, and I didn't. If it had been longer, if he had spent more time, on the other side of the veil and that whole manic thing at the very end there, I wouldn't have liked the book as much. I think he did well to like, okay, we're going to get to the other side here, and then we're going to wrap this shit up.
It reminded me of It, where you find out, like, the really bad things, this giant spider.
Yeah.
Like, really? It's a giant spider. Wow.
But it's a giant spider.
I know.
It's a squid.
It's a
and a whale that flies.
Right. Yeah. And of course, there's, you know, people get their comeuppance and...
Yep.
And
yeah, the...
I love it when people find out that their lord, the lords that they're worshipping just want to eat them. Yeah. That's basically how it goes.
I found that out in confirmation class.
He just wants to eat you.
Just wants to devour you. But the whole first 4/5 of the book, which is, you know, proliferating these mysteries and then solving them a little bit, but then you open up a couple more. That whole section I really enjoyed. The one drawback, and I think you talked about this before we started, well, we talked about it earlier in this cast, is that it starts slow because he's measuring out these revelations bit by bit. You have the bit with the green cockroaches. You have the discovering that the housing agent is really just an actress.
But the electrical wires are connected to nothing.
To nothing, yeah. That the that your phones don't work there. That room that Veek's room is always 69 degrees, not 68, not 70. No matter if it's the dead of summer or the dead of winter. It's, you know, that's interesting, and you're like, wow, what's going on? And you never really find out exactly why that's the case.
No.
But you figure out it has something to do with this machine. That's the house. And then there's that
porthole to the universe.
Yeah, that was actually kind of a cool scene.
It was.
The old lady just disappears into the
Like, where is little Mrs.
Yeah,
what's her face?
Mrs. Mary or whatever.
I think she went into the.
I think she's into the vacuum.
Oh. She's probably dead.
She's probably dead.
Hurtling towards the sun. Yeah.
And I was sad when Tim. Dies at the end.
Tim dies at the end.
Because you never really find out his mystery either. You're pretty sure that he is like
ex-CIA.
Yeah.
It might have went to that house on purpose.
Yeah, you're not quite sure. And then the guy who was surveilling him, what exactly his job was. And then you never find out the organization that set up the house. You meet a representative at the very end of the book, but you don't know anything more really about is it a government agency? Is it a private agency? Is it international? Is it U.S. only?
Well, here's some things that are a little confounding.
Okay.
Number one, if that's true,
mm-hmm.
and somebody already knew about this house and knew about how it works, right? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't they just staff it with staff?
Exactly. Right? I mean... The author, Peter Klein, spends a lot of time explaining the improbable. And he spends a good amount of time trying to explain why just a bunch of schmucks are living there.
Right.
And it's unconvincing. And it's
not,
and
it's, yeah, it's not
and it's, and it's less convincing because he spends so much time trying to explain it. Because right. He knows it's not convincing, so he tries to convince us.
Right, it's not convincing.
It's not convincing. But I set that aside. But you're right. If you think about it, it just falls apart. A lot falls apart if you think about it in this book.
It mostly falls apart.
Like
it mostly falls apart.
I love how the fact, you know, this happens a lot actually, I think, is that Nikola Tesla and H.P. Lovecraft end up in the same book because they're both magical seers.
Yeah.
It happens a lot. Yeah. But, you know, I don't read a lot of those books, I guess. So it didn't annoy me. But if I was a person who read, like, I mean, there are people who, like, read lots and lots of Lovecraftian fiction. And I am sure they just roll their eyes when freaking Nikola Tesla shows up over and over
That's
again.
So funny because I didn't realize that because I just watched a documentary on Tesla.
Yeah.
And
he was an interesting guy, but he wasn't.
He had visions.
Well,
he had a lot of visions. He had mm-hmm. visions when he was a kid. He had visions when his mom died. Yep. Who knows what he was connected to.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been interesting for him to have more unfettered resources to develop what he did. But you know, he didn't have any contact with dark forces or anything like that. Or
lightning.
Did he?
Lightning's kind of a dark force. He did a lot with lightning.
He sure did.
I did like the idea of the house. I did like that idea of the house and what it was. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't to, and that it really was keeping things neutral.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of an interesting... I sort of suppose it's like the doomsday clock or something.
Yeah.
You know, like we're always... This idea was we're always on the precipice of the end of the world.
Yeah.
And there's like maybe this one thing that's holding it back from happening.
Yeah. Well, what's the explanation? The specific explanation is that this scientist, Kabach, had discovered that when the Earth population reached a certain level, there was enough psychic energy to break down the barriers between dimensions, and that these giant creatures would come through and slurp up humanity and life until the population was down low again, and then the barrier would close. So it's sort of like this cosmic population control. So he and Nikola Tesla and H.P. Lovecraft's grandfather, Mr. Whipple, designed this machine, built this machine in the abandoned Hollywood Hills before there was a Hollywood. And then Hollywood just sort of grew up around it while the machine kept working, doing its job, making sure all the dials were at zero and that the balance between the universes was equal as the human population got higher and higher and higher. So I thought that was actually kind of an ingenious little...
Yeah, it was.
A little device.
I like that.
And that was very science fiction-y.
That seems science fiction-y to me.
Yeah.
And the thing that was like, so if the whales came in and ate everybody up until the psychic energy went down and then the veil closed, would the whales still be on this side of the veil or the other side of the veil?
Well, I think the answer to that, the answer is no, that they would die, because that's what they discovered with the seven-legged cockroaches. Yeah, that they have to be within the certain range of the thin spot between the universes.
So I'm sort of like, why not? Let the veil go down.
That's a very Lovecraftian thought. Yeah, just scrub some of the barnacles off, and the ship will
sail. Maybe we'd be in that that number.
Oh yeah,
when the squirrels come marching in, but but whatever. There are squirrels.
Come slurping in. When the squirrels come floating. All right. I think that idea is supposed to be a little seductive. Which helps explain why the family of the red herring
wants to bring it in, but they think they're not going to be devoured.
Yeah, they
think they'll be honored.
Yeah, that's the.
It's in all religion, right?
Exactly. There. Yeah. Pretty much the rapture of the nerds.
So, I didn't finish watching the Titans.
Attack on Titan.
But it's almost that same idea. Like, it really brings these things are there really just to devour the population.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, well.
Yeah, and there's this, all this mystery. Like, where do they come from? What do they want? Why are they there? How do they work? Why do they eat? Because they literally cannot digest anything.
Right, but they're there to bring the population down.
Yeah,
to like make a balance.
Totally worked. So, yeah.
Well, that's sort of the Gaia theory. You know, Earth is this living thing that, you know, once one thing is out of balance, it'll definitely do these things to create balance. I don't know if that's true or not, but it seems like there's times throughout great plagues and
this planet is alive, and this planet will regulate itself and it will figure it out. Global warming will help figure it out, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the Earth will abide.
Yeah,
not like it is, but it will abide.
It'll make its adjustments, and
we might be a part of that. We might not.
we'll make our own adjustments.
Yes, we all might be living in underground in a big hole.
So all in all, I'm really glad we read this book in the summer. Because it was a good, fun read for me, and really nothing more than that.
It was fun, but I have to say I was bored and it was tedious for long time. Yeah, this is going to be another one of those. But then it started,
Yeah, it really picks up.
It started picking up, because I was like counting, oh my God, I have 700 pages to read.
Was it that long?
Well, on my, yeah. Oh. On my, you're a very big type.
Yeah, big type, yeah. Because you did it on your iPad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just, I enjoyed its sense of humor, too. It was funny in parts. The banter between the characters, especially between Veek and Nate.
And Tits.
And what is her name? Oh, it's Zila. Zina. Zila, something like that.
Yeah.
And the love story, it's very slight and very beside the point between Nate and Veek. I was entirely charmed by. And the scene where they fall on the bed together was just right. It was just right.
It was. And it was nerdy.
And it was super nerdy. And it was just, I was biking home when I was listening to it.
You start crying.
No, I had this big goofy smile on my face. And I was like, this is exactly how to do this in this particular book, because it's beside the point, but it's just a really nice little moment. It doesn't last very long. And it's done.
It's done, yeah. And he, you know, he gets his reward in the end.
He gets his reward, yeah.
He gets to become the super.
Mm-hmm. He gets to become the new Oscar. Yeah, so, I'd recommend this book for, not as a cornerstone of the genre or anything like that, but it's a nice little...
Wait, you'd recommend it as a cornerstone of the genre?
No, it's not the cornerstone. No, not as a cornerstone
of the genre. Of this genre, what would you say is the cornerstone?
Well, this book really is a weird tale. I would say this particular book, more than anything else, resembles H.P. Lovecraft's last published story.
Is that the one in the apartment building?
Yeah, it's called Dreams in the Witch House.
Yeah, I think we read that.
But that's a really good story. It's about, you know, this house, this garret apartment having a... it has this weird angles to it that opens up into another dimension. Mm-hmm, and so this is very, that's, mm-hmm. that is a cornerstone of this particular genre. Mm-hmm. But this is a good fleshing out of that and, you know, mixing with other elements and with a good amount of fun. Lots of fun in this book.
Yeah, it's fun. And it really is if you're wanting a kind of moosh boosh of House of Leaves.
Yeah,
this is probably
House of Leaves had a sense of fun too, but
it's very complicated.
It was complicated fun.
Exactly. And this was not complicated.
This is uncomplicated fun. So, it's funny. We totally ripped House of Leaves a new one when we just podcast about it, but
we kind of did, but we kind of didn't. There's things I admired about that book.
I did too, and the book has staying power. The book keeps coming back. The book left a mark on us.
Yeah, whoever that guy was.
We won't explain that, but just read our reviews on iTunes.
Troll. I hope you're still listening.
He's definitely not. And he's definitely a him.
he definitely has a sad life. Yeah, so there we go. That might be edited out.
It's entirely up to you. I'd be happy to let it in there.
All right.
Should we move on to a little...
I need to drink because it's not even noon yet.
We need another cocktail. All right, so let us declare it cocktail time.
I kind of feel like you know, it's always, you know, 1 minute to cocktail time, and there's all of life keeps it from getting there, but every once in a while the veil is lifted and we get to go into cocktail time is really sort of the norm, and everything keeps us from that.
Everything keeps us from cocktail time.
Right.
that's a very profound insight. And it's one that I think I will use to amend my ways. Embrace the cocktail time. So, in honor of our the end of our long national lime nightmare.
Yes. Oh my God, it's been horrifying.
It's horrifying.
At night, I'm crying in my bed.
Oh, what happened to all the limes?
I had that one plastic lime, fakey lime juice thing. I'm cradling in my heart.
I still have a case of Rose's lime juice underneath my bed. What am I going to do with all that? Gimlets for everybody. Hey, kids. Shut up with the lemonade.
But you know why the lime crisis is over? Because we have good old American limes, not those Mexican limes.
That's right. I think.
It's true.
No, it is. Really?
Yeah, because it's lime. We have our lime season now.
Oh, yeah. So the market's not cornered anymore. Yeah,
we don't need no stinking Mexican limes.
Until next winter.
Yes.
So what are we drinking?
Well, it's kind of like a daiquiri.
It's exactly a daiquiri.
Well, so here's how we made it.
Yeah.
We have a...
cocktail shaker.
A hot cocktail shaker and some ice.
Mm-hmm.
Some crushed ice, perhaps.
But before you get to that point, I think we need to make a special simple syrup.
Yes.
So
simple syrup is one part sugar to one part water.
Yes. And you just heat it up until the sugar dissolves. Yeah.
Yep.
And then just cool it off.
And don't touch it. Don't stir it. Just let it do its thing.
Yeah. But we're going to make a special simple syrup. We're going to add some dark fruit.
So just get some berries.
Like blueberries.
Or huckleberries or brambleberries.
Or Saskatoon berries.
Yeah, any of them. Or blackberries.
Yeah, something dark.
And if you can't find them fresh, just get them frozen.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's even better.
Yeah, cheaper.
Because you're not really eating the fruit for the fruit. You're using it.
Yeah, in fact, once you get the sugar dissolved in this, so put that in there, crush it up. Heat it up a little bit so it starts to steam a little bit and the sugar dissolves. Turn it off.
Yep.
Let it cool a little bit and then strain it. Just strain it through a sieve or something like that. You don't need cheesecloth.
Or a coffee filter.
Yeah. That
won't work.
No.
Just use a sieve.
A sieve would be fine. So you get most of the chunks out. There can be a few in there, but not too many.
Yeah.
And that is your dark berry simple syrup. Now you get out your cocktail shaker.
Yes. And your two shots of dark rum.
Yeah. Basically, so I think like the basic ingredients is like equal parts simple syrup, dark rum, and then you juice an entire lime.
So I would do two shots of the rum.
Yeah.
Two shots of the simple syrup.
The whole lime.
And if it's a small lime, get two limes.
Get two, yeah. And you
Because the American limes are huge right
huge.
Now.
Huge.
They're the size of a fist.
Yeah, but if you go to like Trader Joe's to get that bag of tiny little limes, use two of those.
Yeah.
Which is a good deal, by the way. Totally take them.
And then you put that all in there and shake it up.
Shake it up.
And
strain it into a martini glass.
Yeah, and maybe just put a little brambleberry in there or something.
Yeah, exactly. Just garnish it however you want. And what are we calling this?
I forgot.
We're calling it the Lovecraft Daiquiri.
Lovecraft Daiquiri.
Yeah, it should be sort of like dark and funky looking.
Yeah.
But, have some sweet, sour, rummy deliciousness.
And I highly recommend it first thing in the morning.
Exactly. It's very, very tonic.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Chin-chin. Glug, glug, glug. So,
we should.
Yeah.
Here we go.
And there we are.
All right.
All right. So, if only the world really worked that way.
Exactly.
It's so much better.
So what should we read next?
Well, I think we should read a book of some sort.
Well, I've been lobbying for us to read one of Dan Simmons's later horror novels.
Uh-huh.
Because we read his first one, his first book, really.
What one was that again?
The Song of Kali.
Oh, God, yeah.
So fun. But let's read.
I did not like that book.
You
liked it.
I liked it, but I think I like it because I like Dan Simmons. I've read some of his sci-fi. So I wanted to like it. But this is a later
book. I can't think of Dan Simmons without thinking of Richard Simmons, which has me just thinking of infantilism, which has me thinking of...
Oh, see, now I'm a little scared.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to... He's written a bunch of horror novels, but we're going to pick this one. It's called Carrion Comfort.
It better be good.
And if it's not, we'll bitch about it next time. It'll be fine. So, Carrion Comfort by Dan Simmons.
And we're hoping... We have a special guest when we read the next book, but we can't. We don't know.
We'll see. Yeah, one of you people out there is going to come and visit us here in Doppeltown. They found
We're
us.
Very excited.
They found us.
How did you cross the veil and find Doppeltown? It's a secret.
Turn the
plane.
Dials back. Turn the dials back.
So.
Anyway, we'll see what happens with that. He doesn't know it yet. So there he is. That's our book, Carrion Comfort, Dan Simmons. Go on and get it. Read it.
All right. Out of here.
So fast. right. So that was our little respite.
Yep.
So do you have any more to say about 14 by Peter Kleins?
It's a good number.
It's a good number. I have to say the title of the book is shit.
What would you call it?
Not 14.
What would you call it?
15? See, so I actually have some experience of sitting in meetings with other publishers, mm-hmm. where you're trying to come up with a title for a book.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just can't do better. And so I actually gave some thoughts about what else would I call this book. And I couldn't do better. I was like, what did you call it? Like the Cavatch Building. Or the Cavatch Building, or
the Cavatch Effect.
The Cavatch Effect, or
I call it 1 minute to doomsday.
How about the high cost of low rent?
Oh, you know what? That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a. But you pick that book up and you're like, this isn't a novel. This is a book about urban politics.
That's true.
So it's hard. It's really hard to like pick a good title for a book, and sometimes you just have to go with. A simple title that you sort of get out of the way, and then depend on the cover image and the back cover copy to do the work for you. And the cover image of this book is really good. This is this lock on this old beaten up door.
How about what's the guy's name?
Peter Kleins.
No, the character who built the building.
Kavach, Mr. Okay, he's like a Uzbek or some kind
what of. What Kavach built? That's what I would call it.
The house that Kavach built.
Yeah, or what Kavach built.
Yeah.
But it was really Kavach, Lovecraft, and...
Tesla. And Whipple.
So you could use all their names.
Yeah.
You can call it Kavach, Tesla,
yeah.
Lovecraft, Whipple. Yeah, exactly. Incorporated!
Yeah,
so, and they solve crazy mysteries!
So this author, Peter Kleins, is he's got a series of books about he does these mashup things, more or less. He did a series of books about they're superhero novels, but they're superheroes dealing with
ex-heroes,
expatriates, but dealing with the aftermath of a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. And they're called X's.
Yeah, the X's. Yeah,
and they're supposed. I started reading one.
Really?
It was very confusing.
Yeah,
I started reading the first like. You were like thrown in the middle of something. Like, what is going on?
I'm not enticed by the superhero novel. Thing, although I understand that there's, you know, Peter Kleins writes some, there's a couple of other short story writers who do them, and what's his name, Grossman, Austin Grossman has written a couple of superhero novels, but is his name Austin? Anyway, so I'm not particularly, so I doubt I'll be reading any of those, but if he writes more weird fiction like this, however, Peter Kleins does, I will get it, and I will bike around the city.
I would rather have Peter Kleins or somebody else write a book with Lovecraft,
mm-hmm.
Tesla, that other guy,
Kravach,
and Whipple,
uh-huh.
And that they're... like these four guys solving mysteries. And then, you know, the last book is, you know, building this house and getting killed. Or maybe they built the house, but then that's where they operate out of.
Interesting. You know, I would read a prequel to this.
And there would be a number of different books about these four guys.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. Doing all these things, discovering these things. And
yeah.
Trying to save the world and
I could enjoy
coming up against all sorts of shenanigans and situations.
Yeah, well, Mr. Peter Kleins, if you're listening to this and you haven't already had this idea, which you probably have.
Or somebody else.
I'd read that.
If I was a writer, I would write that, but I'm not a writer. I'm just a visionary.
You're the idea man.
I just say things. Other people have to do them. So much easier that way.
This has been my experience.
Yes. Hey, there's a place for that.
There's absolutely a place for that. Absolutely.
There's seers and there's doers. So yeah, I got nothing else on this book.
I got me too. I'm the kind of dad. So what else have you been doing with your life?
With my horror life?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Nothing?
I got nothing.
No, I've been listening to I've been revisiting. Some novels that meant a lot to me when I was a teenager. Novels by Robert Silverberg. We actually read one of them here for the podcast, Book of Skulls, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Book of Skulls.
But I've been rereading a bunch of other ones. And I have to say, while they have all dated kind of noticeably from the early 70s, late 60s milieu when he wrote them. I have to say they're still pretty good. I'm really enjoying them. I read the Stochastic Man, and I read The World Inside.
There's always that,
read Nightwings.
There's always that chance you take when you go back to revisit something.
Yeah, and that was
childhood.
Yeah, and I was worried, actually. Yeah. I was like, yeah.
Because it best kept there.
Yeah, you know? Things are some, yeah, never watch it. Actually, as much as I sound like I have much affection for Scooby-Doo, and I do, I would never go back to rewatch those shows.
I would never reread The Counterfeit Coin.
Oh,
my no. First mystery book when no. I was in third grade.
Wow.
I would never reread that.
Or for me, Dar Tellum, The Visitor from Another Planet. The first sci-fi book I ever read in third grade. But I still remember the name.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, what should we do? Should we...
we gotta get out of here because Forbidden Book Group Studios is freaking hot.
It's heating up. So, let's turn all the dials whichever way.
Yes.
and bring the machine to a complete stop.
And yes. And then let
the squales
come on in and just
have a field day.
Have a field day.
Lunch for the squales.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dance apocalyptic band that make Kirk dance apocalyptic now. Does your food taste plastic?